sahana vavatu, sahana punaktu, saha viryam karavavahai, tejasvina vatitamastu ma vidvishavahai. Om shanti shanti shanti. We're on verse 69, chapter 7, 69. Avantarena vakyena, avantarena vakyena, paroksha brahmadhir bhavet, paroksha brahmadhir bhavet, sarvatraiva mahavakya, sarvatraiva mahavakya, vicharat aparokshadihi, vicharat aparokshadihi. Avantarena vakyena paroksha brahma dihi bhavet sarvatra eva mahavakya vicharat aparoksha dihi. So this is just continuing the discussion of paroksha jnanam and aparoksha jnanam, indirect knowledge and direct knowledge. And now they're talking about it in reference to the mahavakya and what we call avantaravakyas. So here it says, by the avantaravakyas, by the subsidiary statements. Avantara means the supporting statements in the Vedas and the Upanishads. There are many statements which are supportive and set up the Mahavakya. Right? The Mahavakya is the statement that brings together the identity, the non-dual identity between the Atma and Brahman, between the self of the Jiva and the self of Brahman. Or another way of saying it, the identity, the recognition that all of this is but consciousness. That's the Mahavakya. And that Mahavakya is really the tatparya, the essence, exactly what the Upanishads are aiming at. That is what the knowledge that the Upanishads have to give, is that you are the being that you are, your innermost self, this I, the being that you are, is in fact Brahman, is in fact infinite, is in fact the self of all beings. Or is in fact the very conscious existence, which is the truth of the creation. That's the Mahavakya. But now, the Upanishad can't just come to you and say Tattvamasi, that thou art. It has to set that up for you. And in the previous verse, it talked about Adhyaropa Apavada. The Adhyaropa is creating the context, this whole superimposition. The entire infinite creation, when we look at the creation as, for instance, as Ishwara, as being an Ishwara being Sarvajna, being omniscient, all of these words that are ascribed to the Lord, the entire creation, space, air, fire, water, earth, and everything in it, being the body of the Lord, Virat, right? And then Hiranyagarbha as being the subtle body of the Lord. This is all setting up the Mahavakya. It's recognizing the nature of Ishwara as the total, and then recognizing you, the individual, as being the body, the mind, the sense organs, the five koshas, the three shariras, the three bodies, you know, physical, subtle, and karana sharira. All of these things are setting up a context that allows you to then, through the apavada, so the adhyaropa is setting up the context. It's really maya. It's looking at the individual along with the upadis. It's looking at Ishwara along with the upadis. Right? It's looking at Atma with all of the upadis that make it into a jiva. It's looking at Brahman with all of the upadis that make it into Ishwara. Right? The whole Maya upadi. So the Maya upadi is going to be the adhyaropa. The jiva upadi is going to be the adhyaropa, the superimposition. So taking yourself to be, what you take yourself to be now as an individual, this body, mind, sense organs, this person, this I, right? If I acknowledge this I that includes the body, the mind, the sense organs, everything that you take to be yourself, the conscious being, is still there. But the adhyaropa is adding on all of the upadis. It's the addition of all of the upadis. The apavada is the negation of all of the upadis, the conditioning adjuncts, to the recognition of yourself. For Brahman, the adhyaropa is the ishwaratvam, talking about the whole maya upadi. The negation of the apavada of Ishwara is the apavada of the maya upadi, the whole upadi, to the recognition of what is actually there, which is Brahman, which is the self. And so you need the adhyaropa to acknowledge the experience that we have, and you need the apavada, the negation of this experience that we've defined, so that we have a common language, so we've defined the experience. And then the apavada is the negation of that experience to the recognition of the underlying identity. That the self that I am is the self that you are, is the self which is Brahman. So that's the adhyaropa apavada. Now the avantaravakyas are the, in the Upanishads, there are many, many statements that are supporting the Mahavakya. So these subsidiary statements that build up the context and that give the support to the crux of the teaching, which is the Mahavakya, those are called the Avantaravakyas. So supporting vakyas, supporting statements or subsidiary statements are sometimes how we translate them. They're important because they provide the context. So here it says, Avantarena vakyena, by the Avantaravakya, paroksha brahmadihi bhavet. One gains a knowledge of Brahman, which is paroksha. Paroksha jnana, an indirect knowledge of Brahman. So you understand Brahman, the infinite self, which is the infinite self of Ishwara, who is sarvajnatvam, all-knowing. Right? So we don't think of Ishwara as myself. We don't think of Brahman as myself. So the avantara vakyas, the subsidiary vakyas, will set up Ishwara, whose self is Brahman, whose self is infinite. But then, so sarvatraeva, it's this way in all of the Upanishads. Sarvatra means in all. So then in all of them it goes like this. Then he says, mahavakya vicharat. From the vichara, from the analysis of the Mahavakya, aparoksha dihi. One gains aparoksha jnanam. Dihi is just jnanam. So the Avantaravakya set up the context. The Mahavakya sets up, makes you recognize the identity. Where the Brahman and Ishwara that had been paroksha for you, that had been indirect, an indirect understanding of the Lord, an indirect understanding of the self of the Lord, becomes a direct, immediate knowledge when I understand that the Ishwara, the Atma, the Brahman, which is Ishwara, the self of Ishwara, is in fact myself. That's the Mahavakya. And so there are many Mahavakyas. Every Upanishad will have Mahavakyas in it, not just even one. It'll have several Mahavakyas. But there's some Mahavakyas that are, the four Mahavakyas that are often quoted is one for each Veda. The Tattvamasi, that thou art, is maybe the most well-known, Tattvamasi, that thou art. That's from the Sama Veda and the Chandogya. The Ayam Atma Brahma, this Atma, Ayam, this Atma. This Atma, when you say this Atma, this makes it immediate. This Atma itself is self-evident. Right? This self that I am, this Atma is Brahman. I am Atma Brahman. That's from the Mandukya Upanishad of the Atharva Veda. So that's another one, very famous. Prajnanam Brahma is from the Rig Veda, the Aitreya Upanishad. Prajnanam Brahma. That one, prajnanam, consciousness, the consciousness which I am. This prajnanam, this consciousness is Brahman. Remember, Brahman means the self which is infinite. Right? So if you say prajnanam Brahman, Brahma, consciousness which, they're referring to the consciousness which is your consciousness, it is that consciousness which is the self the infinite self, the prajnanam brahma. Then the other one, aham brahmasmi. That's from the Yajurveda, Brihadaranyaka of the Yajurveda. So these are the four. When they talk about the Mahavakyas, aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman. It's another, it's a good Mahavakya for Nididhyasana. Aham, I, aham asmi, aham brahmasmi, aham brahma asmi, I am Brahman. And so again, all of these, so tatvamasi, that thou art, I am Atma, Brahma, this Atma is Brahman, prajnanam Brahma, consciousness is Brahman, aham brahmasmi, I am Brahman. All of these are bringing together the self, myself, with the self which is Ishvara, with Brahman, the self which is infinite, the consciousness which is infinite. And so it is exactly, this is the resolution point of all of the Mahavakyas. And so the whole teaching methodology of Advaita Vedanta is meant to take the student step by step by step by step to the recognition of this Mahavakya. And there are many different pathways to bring about this recognition. But the pathways are going to involve all of these avantra vakyas, all of these secondary vakyas, which are really setting up the context so that the Mahavakya can take place. The Mahavakya, this identity that brings together the self with the infinite, this Mahavakya has to take place through vichara. You know, for viveka jnanam, or vichara, you know. Vichara means analysis. Analysis means that your mind has to be involved, you know, in discriminating. It has to be a discriminative analysis of your mind actually recognizing and seeing the truth of what's being said, step by step by step. That's why this isn't... It's not an intellectual knowledge. It's not a lecture. Vedanta is not a lecture, you know, like a sermon. It's not a sermon or a lecture where you're supposed to take notes. That there's anything wrong with taking notes, but the way you take notes is a little different, because the teaching has got to be pointing at a reality, right? It has to be pointing at a reality that is meant for you to recognize. In the world, we have this type of thing all the time. Like if I were just to say, like for very simple, if I say, see this lamp, right? Now, if I say, see this lamp, notice my finger too, and the words, see this lamp. What if you were to write down, see this lamp, right? Taking notes, see this lamp. What if I made it even worse? I want you to see this lamp. I want you to see this lamp. Right? So that's when we're looking, that's about the size of it. When Vedanta is not being listened to, when the Shravana is not taking place. Shravana, that's why it's so important that the teacher actually teach the student how they're supposed to listen. Because we're used to listening to lectures where you take notes and it's like a theory, you're getting a theory. Well, this isn't like that. The Advaita Vedanta is a pramana. And so it's actually pointing out, describing the reality to you. And the reality is what you're actually experiencing. The words are pointing to that reality, which then you have to discern. Right? You have to be looking at the reality that the words are pointing to, rather than just thinking about the sticking on the words themselves. And so here, like for instance, if we look at the nature, want to get to the nature of your innermost self, and we describe a certain fact would be like this. The teacher is describing it, and now as the teacher I'm describing this. Your physical body, please let your mind be aware of your physical body. And notice that this physical body actually is an object of your awareness, that you can objectify it. Okay? These are words that are pointing to a reality to be recognized. And what if I say, go on from there, and I say, notice that actually this physical body that is being recognized by you is something which is recognized through your five sense organs. That's the only way that you have a perception of the physical body. You can see it with your eyes, you can feel it with your sense of touch, etc. Okay? These are words that are describing a phenomena, how your perceptual world works, how cognitions take place, right? And so vichara, when we say vichara, it means that your mind is involved and engaged in discerning the truth of these words based upon your own experience. That's what we mean by vichara. And so when the Mahavakya, which brings together both what we call, as we'll see in a minute, the Tvampada, the nature of the you, Tvam means you, and the Tatpada, the nature of the creation, the nature of Ishvara. Vichara needs to be done. In a, say if I say Tat Tvamasi, you are that. Your mind has to go step by step into the recognition of yourself. Right? What do we mean by Tvam? What do we mean by you? That's a huge question. I mean, if you just ask somebody on the street or ask your friend, what do you mean by you? When you say you, what do you mean? Well, I mean me. I'm here, the one who is here. Well, who is that one? Now the vichara begins. Who is that one? And that vichara doesn't stop until you get to the innermost subject, right? Now, it's the same with the Tatpada, with the nature of this creation, except the Upanishads have a lot to say about the nature of the creation. And so the analysis of the Tatpada, of that, of Ishvara, is going to be directed by the Upanishads. The Tvampada is directed by the Upanishads, but here you are wholly, immediately available to yourself, where the whole Tatpada, Ishvara, is not immediately available to your knowledge. You don't know what Ishvara is. You don't know what the Lord is. So the Upanishads present that to you and all of the discerning logic that goes along with it. And so that Tatpada, then you need to apply your mind, vichara, step by step, the analysis of what the Upanishads have to say, step by step by step, so you actually recognize what they're talking about. Right? See what they're talking about. Because this is this creation of experience that we have, like for instance in this room, I'll call it the prima materia, that the material that we're working with is what is right here. This physical world, this is the creation, this is Ishvara, right? And then this is the jiva, this is the body, the mind, the sense organs, this is what's being talked about. The totality of your experience right here, right? And it will extend it some, but this is basically it. And so the words, just like maybe in science, if you're working in the laboratory, you're actually working with the material. You're seeing what it is. You're seeing what it does. You're seeing how reactions take place. Here we're working with this. We have to actually see it. That seeing it, understanding it, is what we call vichara. Okay, that's analysis. It's not an intellectual understanding apart from the reality of what's being talked about. So that's the Mahavakya Vichara. From this Mahavakya Vichara that brings the Atma and Brahman together, the recognition of that identity. So from this Mahavakya Vichara, you end up with Aparoksha Jnanam. Direct, immediate knowledge. There's a huge difference between paroksha jnanam and aparoksha jnanam. Paroksha jnanam is indirect knowledge where you understand that this whole infinite creation is Ishvara and Ishvara's self is Brahman, one infinite self. That's paroksha jnanam. The aparoksha jnanam, you're really just talking about yourself, right? The whole truth of this infinite creation is Brahman. Paroksha jnanam, because I have no idea that I am Brahman. Aparoksha jnanam is that this whole infinite creation, which has for its being Brahman, I am that Brahman. That is aparoksha jnanam. Because the aparoksha, the self that I am, is not away from me. And so the Mahavakya has to bring this Brahman, that Brahman, to this Atma. That's the thing that has to click. I have to say, ah, that's me. It is myself. I am the self, which is the self of the whole. That's the recognition that has to take place. So here, he's using two terms. Verse 68, it was the adhya rupa apavada, the superimposition and the negation. So I want those terms to be clear. The adhya rupa is the superimposition. Superimposition is the maya upadhi. The maya upadhi from the standpoint of the individual is the jiva upadhi. The whole maya upadhi is from the standpoint of Ishvara. Right? So the whole manifest creation, maya itself, that manifests as the whole time-space of creation, includes Ishvara, the Ishvara upadhi, the sarvajnatvam of the Lord, and this individual jiva. This is the maya, what's contained in the maya upadhi. That maya upadhi enjoys consciousness and existence. Consciousness and existence is the very self of this maya upadhi. There's nothing here in this creation that has any distance at all from consciousness. Right? The whole creation enjoys being, enjoys existence. So we can say this whole creation enjoys existence, it enjoys being. It is. That's adhya rupa, right? Here's the whole creation that I'm experiencing. The whole thing is. Then what do? I peel off the maya until I recognize that actually the existence, the being, the consciousness that this whole creation enjoys, right, is independent of the creation. In fact, the self of the creation, right, is both immanent and transcendent. In other words, what the upavada is the recognition that the conscious being that this creation enjoys is the truth of the whole creation. That's the upavada. It's going from the jiva to the atma, going from the Ishvara to Brahman. If I go from the jiva to the atma, and if I go from Ishvara into Brahman, then the identity, aham brahmasmi, is something that clicks with the Mahavakya. So the apavada is the negation of the maya upadhi. The adhya rupa is the acceptance of the maya upadhi. Do they know what I mean by that? Upadhi, the maya upadhi, and jiva upadhi? So the acceptance of the maya upadhi, the delineation of the maya upadhi, the acceptance of the jiva upadhi, the delineation of the jiva upadhi with all detail, that's the adhya rupa. The apavada is the negation of the maya upadhi and the jiva upadhi so that I can recognize the identity which is brought about by the Mahavakya. Okay? So that's how the teaching works. So this adhya rupa apavada is something very important. The next set of terms, avantaravakya and mahavakya. The avantaravakyas are all of the statements that we do to set you up. They all have to do with maya, understanding what's going on with maya. And then the mahavakya is what, after the apavada, after the negation, which makes you recognize that that your being is the self of this creation. That my being is your being. That's what it amounts to. My being is your being. My being is the being of the plant. My being is the being of your dog, of your pet, of your parent, of your enemy. My being is the being of all beings. That's what the understanding is. That's the Mahabhakya. Okay? So, let's go to the next one.
Brahma paroksha siddhartham. Brahma paroksha siddhartham. Mahabhakyam itiritam. Mahavakyam mitiritam vakyavrittavato brahma vakyavrittavato brahma aparokshe vimatirnahi aparokshe vimatirnahi Brahma aparoksha siddhi artam mahavakyam iti iritam. Vakya vrittau ataha Brahma aparokshe vimatihi nahi. He says, the Mahavakyam iti iritam. This Mahavakya, the Tattvamasi, Aham Brahmasmi, Prajnanam Brahma, this Mahavakya, the Mahavakya, is said, Brahma aparoksha siddhyartam, is said to be for the sake of, for the purpose of establishing, of bringing about siddhi, accomplishing the accomplishment of Brahma aparoksha, the immediate recognition of Brahman, the aparokshatvam. Aparoksha, aparoksha is the same as aparokshatva. The immediate recognition of my of Brahman as my being. If I say Brahma, Brahma means the self which is infinite, the self of Ishwara, okay? Self of the Lord. If I say Brahma, the Mahavakya is for the aparoksha, the immediate knowledge of Brahman, right? There's only one way to have immediate, direct knowledge of Brahman, and that is through the Mahavakya, recognizing that Brahman, the self of the Lord, is myself. There's no way that I can see through my sense organs or through any means of knowledge the self of the Lord, let alone see yourself. Right? I can see your body, right? I can see whatever I can perceive through my sense organs. You know, I can make certain inferences like that. But I can't have a direct knowledge, a direct experience of your conscious being. You say, I can see that you're living and all of that. But the consciousness which you are enjoying, when you say, I am a conscious being, just think about this. You all say, you know, I am a conscious being. I say, oh, I'm a conscious being too. You know? You know? But I can't see your conscious being. I can't have aparoksha jnanam. I can say, I wonder if the consciousness that you enjoy when you say, I am a conscious being, I wonder if that's like mine. You know? I wonder if they're alike. You know? But I can't see it. I can't really even infer it. I can infer that you are living and all of that, but what the conscious being is, I can't have direct, immediate knowledge of. Yeah? And let alone have direct, immediate aparoksha jnanam of Ishwara. Because Ishwara, if we view Ishwara as sarvajnatvam, as being all knowledge, omniscient, omnipotent, whose body is the whole infinite creation, and that Ishwara is a conscious being, and that conscious being, the conscious self of Ishwara, is what we call Brahman. The self, the entire infinite creation has a me. You know, it is a conscious being. And so how am I going to have aparoksha jnanam, direct, immediate knowledge of that conscious being which is Ishwara? We know for certain that we can't have, there's no way through my sense organs, me being a limited being with a limited mind, there's no way that I can have direct knowledge or perception even of Ishwara's upadi, of the whole infinite universe. What is Ishwara's experience? If you think of manifest, infinite manifest knowledge, the totality which is known, that's Ishwara's experience, right? It's like an infinite mind, just like if I were to say, close your eyes and imagine an infinite creation, whatever that imagination is, the entirety of that imagination is known. Let's take Maya as being the totality of knowledge. And the manifestation of that infinite knowledge, that is Ishwara. And certainly we're not going to have direct knowledge of it. We can have an appreciation of it through the Shruti. And you can have a direct knowledge of your little piece of Ishvara. Right? And through infinite extension, understand Ishvara in a way. But you can't have an experience of the entire Maya Upadhi. So there's no question, there's no pratyaksha, there's no direct knowledge, there's barely any paroksha jnanam of Ishvara, just what the Shruti gives us. Certainly there's not aparoksha jnanam. And so the aparoksha jnanam, even of my recognition of you, if I say myself is yourself, the aparoksha jnana comes about from the recognition that the consciousness which I am, that this conscious being that I am, which is non-objectifiable, that it is this consciousness which is meant by Brahman. That's the recognition. That this very consciousness, which has been differentiated from this body, mind, sense organs, and so the body, mind, sense organs, all of my moods, all of my emotions, everything that the jivatvam that makes me into a unique individual, this jivatvam has been recognized as being part of Ishvara, as being belonging to the universe. This is not a big deal. When you think of in a dream or imagination, it's very obvious that all of the individuals in the dream or the imagination are part of the warp and woof of the entire picture. They're not in any way separate. They're all one. Everything in the imagination, all of the jivas, all of the plants, all of the rocks, the sun, the sky, everything is all part of the warp and woof of the whole picture. In your imagination, in your thoughts, even in a painting it's like that. You don't think, oh, you look at a painting and there's some people walking in the painting. You don't think, oh, they entered the painting later. Or that they have some different order of reality from the other objects in the painting. They're all part of the painting. So in our dreams and our imagination, that's very taken for granted. You wouldn't say, you know, you had a dream and then during the dream you decided to enter into it in some way as that there's some different order of reality. It's all part of the same material. And so here, when we do the viveka, what do you recognize is that this body and my mind and my sense organs, all which are objectifiable, all which are known, along with the rest of the universe, that this all belongs and is part of the warp and woof of Ishvara. It belongs to the entire creation, every level of it, even your most subtle thoughts. Your thoughts and your moods and your emotions, your meditative experiences, all of these things are part of Maya. They belong to the creation. The only thing that doesn't belong to the creation as an object within it is the conscious me. Because that self is not something that you can objectify and differentiate. You know, the conscious self is the one that actually illumines and pervades every aspect of your experience in which itself can't be negated. And so when the teaching comes along, going through the jiva upadhi to me, this conscious self that cannot be objectified, and then goes through your jiva upadhi to the same situation, the conscious self that cannot be objectified, and through yourself, the conscious self that cannot be objectified, what is to differentiate oneself from another? It's not going to be the things that have been given to Ishvara. The self, the Atma, can't be objectified. Everything else is objectified. It belongs as part and parcel of Ishvara. But what is to make myself, this me, limited, different from yourself, different from yourself, different from yourself? If all of the upadhis have been seen to be part of the warp and woof of the manifest creation. And so as this becomes clear, then what do we recognize? The self that I am is the self that you are. Is the self that you are. Is the self of the entire creation, because there is nothing to limit it. And so when we go through, and then say we go out into the creation and start analyzing, is there anything in this creation that we call Ishvara? This whole manifest creation, is there anything here that is away from or other than consciousness? We analyze the whole creation. We recognize that there is nothing here, in fact, but consciousness. Just like if you take an ocean and you analyze all of the waves and you analyze the whole ocean, and in the end you find there's nothing there but water. That all of these nama-rupas, all of these names and forms that you go on analyzing, when you want to look at their substance, the substance is not a nama-rupa. Right? It's the water, it's the self of all the names and forms. When we analyze this creation, we analyze all the names and forms, the smaller names and forms that we have to get to. All that is here is the being which is consciousness, which is non-objectifiable. It's not a name and form, it's only myself. And so all of these teaching methodologies bring consciousness, the consciousness which is pervasive in the self of the entire creation, the being of the entire creation. We recognize that that consciousness is my being, that I am that, and that this body, mind, sense organs, that these, all of these upadis that I have taken to be me, all of these belong to the whole manifest creation, which has for itself one self, which is me. So this teaching methodology goes on and on and on, right? Bringing the aparoksha jnanam, the Brahman, the consciousness, which you've recognized as the self of Ishvara, to the recognition that that me, that self, that infinite self is myself. So here it says, the Mahavakya itself is meant, its purpose is to bring Brahman, the consciousness which is the self of all beings, the consciousness which is the truth of the creation, to make that aparoksha. To make it aparoksha means, is for me, the other way we say it is to recognize that myself is Brahman, that this conscious being is Brahman, this conscious being is the self of Ishvara, that I in fact am Ishvara. That's where the resolution has to take place. So he says, okay, the Mahavakya has been told to be for the very purpose of establishing Brahman directly, immediately as my own self. Then he says, Vakya Vrittal, in the Vakya Vritti, the text we did a few years ago, in the Vakya Vritti, right? In that text, he says, therefore, in that text, Vakya Vritti, this Brahma Aparokshe Vimattihi Nahi. There is definitely, this is Vidyaranya talking. He says, you know, in Vakya Vritti, they talk about this. This is exactly what they say in Vakya Vritti, who Shankara wrote Vakya Vritti. This, talking about this Aparoksha Jnanam. He says, Shankara himself taught this in detail in Vakya Vritti. Mm-hmm. I'm not making it up. Yes. He says, Vimatihi Nahi. There is no differing of opinion here. There's no differing of opinion. In Vakya Vritti itself, this aparokshatvam of Brahman is taught. And it is taught very thoroughly that the Mahavakya is meant to give this direct, immediate knowledge. And in fact, in Vakya Vritti, which is taught by Shankara, one of Shankara's texts, the Vakya means the statement, right? It really could be called Mahavakya Vritti. Right? It's an analysis of the Mahavakya. That's what the Vakya Vritti is. That's why Vidyaranya is bringing this up here. Because Vidyaranya is now in the middle of explaining in detail what is considered to be the most crucial understanding in Advaita Vedanta. It is most crucial because if this isn't understood, how this knowledge takes place, then it becomes, again, something which you're seeking through meditative experience or something to be gained later. You're not, then you won't understand the teaching methodology of the Upanishads. And so that's why he's going into such depth. I mean, we've been going on for quite a while about this. So now, but he's not done. Now he says, I've been explaining this for a while, and I want you to know that this has been explained in detail in the Vakya Vritti. In fact, I'm going to now quote 8 verses from the Bhagavad Gita. That's what it says. We take the next verses. All the next verses are from the Bhagavad Gita. Just to show that Chankara deals with this in depth, and there's no difference of opinion in this at all. So let's look at this next verse. He says, Alambanataya bhati, Alambanataya bhati, Yosmat pratiya shabdayoho, Yosmat pratiya shabdayoho, Antak karana sampinna, Antak karana sampinna, Bodhasattvam padabhidaha, Bodhasattvam padabhidaha. Alambanataya bhati yaha asmat pratyaya shabdayoho antakarana sambhinna bodhaha sa twampada abhidaha. He's now said the last line, he says, sa twampada abhidaha. It means, it says, this is the, that, saha, is the immediate meaning, like vacharta, abhidaha, the immediate meaning of the word tvam. So now he's defining. What is the immediate meaning of the word tvam? He says, antakarana sambhinna bodhaha. Consciousness, bodhaha, consciousness here, which is sambhinna, is totally mixed with. Sambhinna, mixed up with the mind. Right? The twampada is consciousness which is mixed up with the mind. Right? So this anyonya ajasa. So antakarana sambhinna bodhaha. Then he says, to go on, he says, that which shines, yaha bhati, that consciousness being mixed with the mind, which shines as the alambanataya, as the very vishya, the very basis of the asmat pratyaya, the pratyaya and the, and how does he say it? The asmat pratyaya shabdayoho. It goes like this. The asmat shabda, the word I. When you say the word I, just the shabda, the word I, it is referring to something. Like if I say the word lamp is referring to something. If I say the word chair is referring to something. If I say the word I is referring to something. That which the word I is referring to is the alambana, is the very basis, it's the very subject matter of the word. Like the alambana of the word lamp is the lamp. The vishya, the subject matter, the thing that the word is referring to is the alambana. So lamp, this is the alambana, this is the thing. Chair, this is the thing. What if you say I, the alambana that the I is referring to, that is, that alambana, that basis is what we're talking about for the twampada. Not only the word, the pratyaya, the vritti. Now, say if you say the words I am, when you say the words I am, you also have a self-experience, right? The pratyaya, it's referring to your being. So I mean, the words refer to something, they mean something, there's a self-experience there. Thing like that, if I say, this is a lamp, the word lamp, the word is referring to this, and a vritti of the lamp is taking place. There's the pratyaya, the vritti, the thought modification of the lamp, right? And the word lamp. So there's the word lamp and the thought modification of the lamp. Now what about when you say, I am, right? There's the I, there's the word, and then there's the self-experience that word is referring to. But that self-experience is going to be the conscious being, the Bodha, is going to be mixed up with the antakarana, with the mind. And so when we say the immediate meaning of the word I, it's going to be the conscious being that you are mixed up with your mind, and then from there we can go to the sense organs and the body, which everything that can be identified with at that point, from that point on, right? So if you say, I am the conscious being who is a thinking, feeling, seeing, perceiving person that has this physical body, that's the vācharta. That's the immediate meaning of the tvampada, of the word tvam. See that? It's not just saying in Sanskrit something that's obvious. Just be totally ignorant, right? And then say, okay, I am a conscious being. You say, I am a conscious being. Now the words, I am a conscious being, those are the shabdas, those words are referring to your self-experience of being a conscious being. That's the pratyaya. That's the experience. You say, I am a conscious being. But now when you're saying that, you are taking a lot of things. There's a lot of superposition taking place. I am a conscious being who am thinking, who am feeling, who am perceiving, who am talking. So all of these, the superimposition is also being taken. See that? But even with all of these things, you still, what is primary to you, is that you are a conscious being. You just assume that the conscious being that you are includes your body and your mind and your sense organs and your thoughts and your feelings. You just assume that. So all of these things dress the conscious being that you are. That's the tvampada. Let's do this next one. Mayo padirchikad yonihi, mayo padirchikad yonihi, sarvajnyatvadi lakshanaha, sarvajnyatvadi lakshanaha, paroksha shabala satya, paroksha shabala satya, adhyatmakastit padabhidaha. Yatmakastatpadabhiddha maya upadhihi jagat yonihi sarvagnyatva adi lakshanaha paroksha shablaha satya adi atmakaha tatpada abhiddha. Now he gives the immediate meaning, the bhācharta, the immediate meaning of the word tat, that. Maya upadhihi, the one who has, for tat, Ishvara, the one who has the maya upadhi. If we say, what is Ishvara's body? The whole maya upadhi. The jagat yonihi, another word for Ishvara. The one from whom the whole creation is manifest. Yoni is the womb of the creation. So the one who contains in himself the entire creation, the jagad yonihi. So the whole maya upadhi, the one who has in unmanifest, the avyakta, in the unmanifest condition, the entire jagat. The one who is sarvagnyatva, the one who is all knowledge, omniscient. All of these, sarvagnyatvadi lakshana, all of these are tatastha lakshana. All of these are kind of like the crow on the house. Tatastha lakshana means they're not inherent, but only what is swarupa lakshana is satyam jnanam ananta. Tatastha lakshana is when you look at Brahman as Ishvara, means the one from whom the whole creation has come. The one who is all knowledge. If you say all knowledge, I mean the creation is, the manifest creation is there. Sarvagnyatvam. The one who has the whole maya upadhi, whose body is the whole maya upadhi. So we're looking at Brahman from the standpoint of the upadhi, of the maya upadhi. That's going to be tatastha lakshana, the one from whom the whole creation has come. Tatastha lakshana, because it's not inherent. It's not the actual inherent nature of Brahman, right? So it's something to recognize, to use to recognize Brahman, but it's not the actual definition of Brahman. So here he says, now, The tetpadalakshana of Ishvara is going to be this. Paroksha shabalaha. It's all of these things that make Brahman paroksha. The Maya Upadi makes Brahman paroksha. You can't know the Maya Upadi, the whole infinite creation. You're not omniscient. You don't have omniscience. So that part of Ishvara, you don't understand that part of Ishvara. You yourself are alpajnaha. You yourself have limited knowledge. You're not omniscient. So Ishvara's omniscience is paroksha to you. You can't imagine how to be a vyakta, the one from whom the entire creation manifests, the one because of whom it is sustained, the one because of whom the whole creation goes into unmanifest creation. That's paroksha. That's indirect knowledge. You don't have immediate knowledge of that. So Maya Upadi, Sarvajnaktvam, the one from whom the whole creation is born, all of these things make Ishvara paroksha. You can't have direct immediate knowledge of any of that. So that paroksha jnanam mixed with satyam jnanam anantam. Satyam Brahman is satyam jnanam anantam. That's swarupa lakshana. Brahman is satyam, pure existence, which is jnanam, which is pure consciousness, which is ananta, limitless. That satyam jnanam anantam you recognize as being the self of the Maya Upadi, as being the self of the one from whom the creation has come, by whom it is sustained, and to whom it goes back. You realize that satyam jnanam anantam is the very self of the whole sarvajnatvam, all-knowership. But it is that satyam jnanam anantam that you have recognized as your very being. The self of this body, the self of the mind, the self of the body, the self of the sense organs, the self of the mind, the self of the buddhi, the very innermost self is what? Satyam jnanam anantam. So I recognize that the satyam jnanam anantam, which is the self of this paroksha Brahman, is the aparoksha, is that Brahman becomes aparoksha in reference to myself. But the tatpadalakshanam is what? Recognizing satyam jnanam anantam, the existence, consciousness, limitless existence, consciousness, as the self of Ishvara, who is the one who has the whole Maya Upadi, right? Ishvara has the whole Maya Upadi, is the one from whom the creation has come, is sarvajnatvam. The nature of that Ishvara self is satyam jnanam anantam. These mix together, the self which is satyam jnanam anantam, which is the one from whom the whole creation is born, that is Ishvara. That is the tatpada abhidaha. Tatpada abhidaha means it's the meaning of the word Ishvara as people understand it before they have knowledge. Where you understand that is Ishvara. I am the limited jiva. Ishvara is satyam jnanam anantam, and the one who has the whole Maya Upadi, that is Ishvara. That's the tadpada vachyarta, the immediate meaning of the word. But the satyam jnanam anantam is totally mixed. It's mixed up with the paroksha, the things about Ishvara that I cannot be. I can be part of that. I can't be that. Everybody see that? I can be part of the Maya Upadi. I can't be the Maya. I can be within the Maya Upadi. I can't be the one who has the whole Maya Upadi. I can be one of the ones who's born. Ishvara is the one from whom the whole creation has come, that the one from whom all beings has come. I'm one of those beings. I'm not the one from whom all the beings has come. I'm one of the beings. Right? So the satyam jnanam anantam is totally identified with what is paroksha to Ishvara. Right? So now you have the tvampada. Say that tvampada is understood and the tatpada is understood. But now the Mahavakya has to come. So let me do that. We'll do it next week. The Mahavakya, because it's several verses, the Mahavakya now has to come that can bring that the parokshatvam of Ishvara, you know, to the aparokshatvam of the self. I have to bring the Brahman, I have to recognize Brahman as my being. And so in the Vakyavritti, it goes through a huge analysis of the Twampada, of the you, makes you understand who you are. Then it goes through a huge analysis of the Tadpada to make you understand who Ishvara is. And then the two have to come together. And there's what we call Bhagatyaga Lakshana. We have to look at all the different types of Lakshana to see how this actually takes place in the teaching methodology. So and that's what he's going to work on, the six verses.
All right.
The second minute. Om Purnamadah Purnamidam Purnat Purnamadachate Purnasya Purnamadaya Purnamevavasishyate Om Shanti 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 Hari Om Shri Gurubhyo Namah Hari Om.
Remember one time you were interviewing Swamiji and he said that the knowledge of Ishvara can only be given to us through the Shruti. So this is the
Paroksha. The Paroksha.
Yeah.
Yeah. There's no means of knowledge for it.
Right.
Yeah.
For which?
For the Paroksha Jnana of Ishvara.
Mm-hmm.
That the creation is that from which that the creation comes from the self, is sustained by the self, goes back to the self, that the whole Maya Upadi is manifest knowledge, all that, the Sarvajnatvam, we have no means of knowledge for that.
Does that always remain a belief, or does that?
Not exactly, because when you belief is a little different than Paroksha Jnanam, because once you understand the vision as a whole, in a sense, there's no other way that it can be. Yeah. But you can't arrive at it on your own. But once you understand it, you see it, and there's not another option there.
Mm-hmm. Because of non-duality.
Yeah, actually. Yeah. Because there's nothing here but knowledge, as the very swarupa of the self is the knowledge actually, and this and then the knowledge in capital K as consciousness, that what we call knowledge, its swarupa is the atma, the very swarupa of knowledge itself is the atma, and so this is a manifestation of knowledge, but what gives the knowledge experience? So there's nama rupa, it's a manifestation of knowledge, it's a manifestation of nama rupa, but the whole of it, it has existence consciousness for its being. And that existence consciousness, from the standpoint of the manifestation, is what gives this sense of it being known, because the knownness is the very nature of consciousness. See, that's, I know that this can be kind of tricky for people, but I think once people get this, maybe my language has been, for some reason, doesn't convey it. But we have this knower, knowing, known. This trinity, right? The knower, knowing, known. the knowledge, the consciousness of the knower is the consciousness of the knowing, is the consciousness of the known. There is no such thing as known other than consciousness. There's no such thing as knowing other than consciousness. There's no such thing as the knower other than consciousness. The consciousness is the being equally of all three. And so when you say, this painting is known, there's the nama rupa which you're experiencing, the name and form that you're experiencing, right, of the painting or of the wall. You're experiencing that, but in the experience of it, it is known, right? Everything that you experience, in fact, is known. That knownness is a common denominator of all your experience. You can say, I am the knower who knows that object. Knower, knowing, known. But really what is there is one consciousness, which is the consciousness of the knower, the consciousness of the knowing, the consciousness of the known. And so known, knower, knowing, known is just, instead of saying the one who is conscious, the act of being conscious, the object of consciousness, we say the knower, the knowing, the known. And so if I say the knower, the knowing, the known, one, pure knowledge is the self of all three. If I say the one who is conscious, the one who is the act of being conscious of something, the object of consciousness, then I can say consciousness is the truth of all three. Because the knower is an upadhi, your mind and sense organs, right? Without the mind and sense organs, there's no knowership. We say the relationship between the mind and the sense organs and the object is the knowing, right? Through the pramana, through the, like the eyes, I am knowing the object. Okay, but still, that knowing itself is still nothing but consciousness. And the object that is known is nothing but consciousness. You see what I'm saying? The whole triptych, the knower, the knowing, and the known, all are maya. They're all nama rupa. And they all enjoy one consciousness. So we have consciousness knower, consciousness knowing, consciousness known.
But isn't that basically really the same as saying all that is here is Brahman?
Yeah. You're just using different words. But if I say all that is here is Brahman, then...
Or
how does that play out?
Yeah, that's all. It's all the same. But we use these other kind of words just because... Because you have to recognize, say if you say Brahman is Satyam Jnanam Anantam, existence, consciousness, infinite. Or just say, for now, existence, consciousness. You have to recognize that existence, consciousness. It has to be differentiated from the experiences of name and form. Right? Because they're totally taken to be one thing. So these things have to be differentiated. So all of these different ways of teaching it are just to help the student differentiate the common denominator consciousness, which is there as the very being of the totality of the being of the knower, the being of the known.
And how does that work out when you want to see the knower knowing the subject?
That's why this viveka of recognizing that the body, mind, sense organs belong to the creation and they're as known as what they know. Mm-hmm. In other words, my eyes know the painting, right? But my mind knows my eyes and the self illumines the mind. So the mind, the eyes, and the painting all are known. So the knower is as known as what it knows. The knower is as objectified as is the object of knowledge that are known through the pramanas. You see that? So all of them enjoy one consciousness.
And when it's knowing, when this knower is knowing the being that's lighting it up.
The knower is not knowing the being that's lighting it up as somebody else. The consciousness illumines the mind, the sense organs, the world. right? That consciousness is recognized to be, by the mind, to be the self-evident me that lights up the mind. Right? So it's not that the mind turns around as another consciousness knowing the consciousness. It differentiates with itself. Itself enjoys consciousness and nama-rupa, name and form, the mind. Right? It's a conscious being with name and form. The name and form goes on changing. The conscious being doesn't. The emotions, say with the emotions or not, the emotions go on changing. The consciousness of the mind doesn't change. The emotions come and go. The conscious being doesn't come and go. Because one doesn't come and go, and the other does, you can differentiate. Because what doesn't come and go is not the same as what goes. Right? And since both are existing in exactly the same place, there is no name and form, there is no experience that's away from or other than consciousness, but you have to recognize that there's the one substance is real. The consciousness, we say, the conscious being is real. The changing name and form are not real. They don't have substance because they come and go. When they're there, they're there. When they're not there, they're not there. When they're there, they exist. When they're not there, they don't exist. Right? But the conscious being, you can't say the conscious being is there sometimes, not there sometimes. So what do you recognize is that the conscious being that you are is what is stable. It never changes. You never change. Your being never changes. And because of that, the mind, which has a buddhi, which is thinking, analyzing, can do vichara, it can recognize that fact. The part that in fact is mitya can say, I'm mitya. The part that's made of maya can say, I am maya. I'm mitya. I'm coming and going, but me, the self, myself, is not coming and going. That's the mind labeling through vichara the very reality of its experience. Because the self is self-evident, consciousness is self-luminous. Right? It doesn't need anybody to make it known. It doesn't need another light to come in. Right? But the mind that enjoys it, that has for itself that self-luminous consciousness, is also maya. And so it goes on thinking and changing, and through the pramana directs it to recognize itself as maya, as mitya, and to recognize its stable self as me. Right? The mitya mind can label the satyam self. The mitya mind can label and recognize its own, the truth of itself.
In a way, it's kind of an irony. The teaching itself is all done in mitya.
Mitya. And yeah. The whole teaching, everything.
And the whole time, the self is always there.
Yes.
Yeah, that's
the teaching, the guru is mitya, the sisha is mitya, the Upanishads are mitya, the Vedas are mitya, the whole thing is mitya. Relieving the mitya suffering for the mitya jiva.
Is self-knowledge mitya? Yeah. Mitya too, right?
Self-knowledge, the whole thing is mitya. Yeah. But the self isn't mitya. Mm-hmm. Right? So in a way, the self-knowledge is not mitya. In this way, the object, the vishaya, yeah, the alam, you know, the thing that the self-knowledge is recognizing.
Right. Is the
satya. Is the satyam, is the truth.
So, but one, to get back to the knower knowing known, so to recognize that that's all consciousness, that's to recognize the truth of your actual experience,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, not now, see? Oh, well. This can go on for 2 months, you know? These kind of dry coughs.
Do you want to go off then?
I think you gave me one. A little late in the game, though. Oh. Cola.
some Indian thing?
Ricola.
Switzerland.
What was I talking about?
You
got lost in my pocket.
I said the knower, knowing, knowing.
Oh, yeah. See, it helps that knower, knowing, known to recognize the pervasiveness of consciousness, to break the dehatma buddhi. So say when you're looking out for your sense organs at this room, for instance, this room is known. Now, can you differentiate the knownness from the name and form in this experience of the room through your sense organs? You know, can you, and then in meditate, say, in just like an open-eye meditation, you can be, let yourself be aware of the room, be aware of the body, your body in the room, on all of that you're hearing, be aware of your sense organs, be aware of any thoughts that are going on in the mind. That the whole jiva, all of the upadis, along with what you're perceiving, be part of the room. And then recognize that every level of that experience is known. There's nothing away from that knownness. And then let the mind start focusing just on the knownness, the conscious being. The knownness is the conscious being. And notice that there is nothing in your experience that's away from that. You know, so you see what you take to be yourself as me, as the knower, right? As the knower, but then you see that the knower itself is something which is known. And so try to differentiate that knownness, the consciousness of the knower, objectifying the knower, what is left, just my own presence, and see how that pervades the room. There's just different ways of working with it. Think like this. Knower and known are both part of Maya. When you say knower, you're talking about your mind, your sense organs. That's part of Maya. Right? So that means that the knower and the known are both known. Right? The knower and the known are both known. So try to differentiate the knownness, the awareness, which both the knower and the known enjoy. Is that too confusing?
I'll work with that.
Yeah.
Ask a question. It seems like what you're saying is that consciousness, that this knownness and consciousness
are the same.
That's yeah. Right.
But the knownness, if you were to get rid of the entire universe that goes into unmanifest condition, what would be left is known.
Yes.
Knownness.
Because you can sense that known, that knownness.
Mm-hmm. It is what is. The known, that's the swata siddham, the swaprakashatvam, the self-evident, self-luminous nature of the self. It is known. It is known not because somebody's knowing it. The very known experience is its swarupa. So if you get, say, this whole room now, through my sense organs, is known. Now, boom, I get rid of the whole creation. The whole room is now gone. There's no duality. What is left? Known. Bring the creation back. Oh, this room is known. Get rid of the creation, get rid of the room, known.
Mm.
Without the namarupa, the knownness is me, is my swarupa, it's my being. It is the nature of consciousness itself. See, another reason why we use these different words is to help you recognize just the nature of consciousness. It's a completed state. It's not knowing. Stop performing an act of knowing. It is known. And so this, when we say this is manifest knowledge for Ishwar, manifest knowledge, you could say the whole creation becomes known. What was there is known, just pure consciousness that is
synonymous with just being known, just pure non-dual knownness, pure non-dual consciousness. Now the creation becomes manifest. Now what do we have? Manifest knowledge, manifest knownness. You say manifest consciousness, that doesn't really work because we don't talk like that. We don't have a word like that to say.
So when you use the word consciousness, knowingness is inherent to it. So
it is. Not inherent to it. It is it.
It is it.
Like a synonym. It's using a different word.
It should be thought about in that format.
It's like, what if we use the word awareness?
Yeah.
We use the word consciousness. I use the word knownness. Swamiji has too. He hasn't done that for a while, but he did. And it really worked for me. That's why
I'm falling in love with that word.
That's all the chit.
What? Chit. That's what it is. Yeah. Or satyam jnanam. Sat chit ananda. Or satyam jnanam anantam. In Taittiriya Upanishad, they say it like that. Where jnanam means chit.
And why is it different then?
Just different roots. Like in this verse that we did, they used Bodha. Sometimes knowledge is used, the word knowledge, like jnanam, is used for consciousness or awareness.
Because
these words are pointing to the same thing.
So is knownness also, you could say knownness is the clay of the pot?
Yeah.
Can you say that? Yeah.
Because satyam is...
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah, that's nice. Knownness is the clay of the pot. The knownness which all of us enjoys is Brahman.
So the knowership that we give to the mind doesn't really belong to the mind at all.
Well, it would be like this. In duality, you have sense organs that are needed to perceive. So you have a seer seeing, and you have the mind which is needed to think and all of that. So those functions belong to the mind. Thinking and then using the sense organs and all that all belongs to the mind, and that's responsible for our vyavahara, for acting in duality, perceiving and knowing things. But the self of that knower, the conscious being, you know, that allows for there to be knowership, right? That consciousness is Brahman, is the self. And that consciousness is always pervasive, like the clay is pervasive to the pot, that consciousness is pervasive to the mind, but the mind is mitya. It doesn't have any inherent being apart from that consciousness. But so the consciousness that the mind enjoys is yourself, and it is changeless. But the mind then is an instrument, part of Maya, that's needed to think and to feel, to have emotions, to have memories, to use the sense organs. And so that's all where the Maya is.
So knowership is prakriti, is part of the prakriti?
Yeah, because, it is, because perception, cognition.
Right.
And the ahankara, which is another type of cognition, is what says, it's a type of thought, it comes and says, I am thinking, right? I am feeling, I am seeing. So it's identifying the consciousness itself with the perception.
So the ahankara is really the problem, isn't it? The notion of an I is what creates the whole separation.
Yeah, and the ahankara, though, is a product of ignorance, right? So it's the self-ignorance that is behind the ahankara.
I mean, self-ignorance, not knowing about it?
Not knowing the nature of yourself is what allows for the ahankara.
Right, and the shuddhi show that, right? Otherwise, you wouldn't know it.
That's right.
The world's not going to tell you.
Yeah, the shruti is the pramana for it.
Yeah.
That's what it tells us.
The problem of the ahankara is the I is claiming the doership, knowership, and not the I is claiming.
Then that's why
the ignorance.
That's why it's born of ignorance, the ahankara.
Right, but the I itself, the...
Not the, the I itself is Brahman.
Is Brahman.
But the ahankara is the I thought.
Right.
And that I thought is born of ignorance in the sense that I am the body, I am the mind, I am the sense organs, I am thinking, I am happy, I am sad. It's one that identifies with the upadhi. So when we say ahankara, we mean
part of the ahankara is fine. I am.
Right.
I am a conscious being. But it doesn't stop there.
Yeah.
I, the conscious being, am the mind. So I am happy.
So
I am sad.
If you take the word ahankara, the word
it makes an I, creates an I. Creates an eye out of the upadhi.
Yeah.
You can take like that. It creates an eye. It makes an eye out of the upadhi. Right?
If you say aham brahmasmi, then is that the bija of an aham?
No, if you say aham brahmasmi, then the aham, that's jnanavritti. The aham is being properly identified. It's a dagda bija for a jnani if I say I'm going to the store. Then I'm using the word I, this body, is going to the store. I know what I'm talking about. I know that the aham is what I mean is the physical body.
But so is still an ahankara? If you say I am Brahman, is that still an ahankara? Or no?
No.
But how did the ignorance start then?
It's beginningless.
Ishvara created that?
So
no, there's no beginning. There's no creation. No, Ishvara has no beginning. Atma, the self, has no beginning.
Right.
It has no time. It's timeless. And it's non-dual. So there's no creation. Nobody created it. Nobody created the self. Nobody created Ishvara. Ishvara is beginningless.
But why is there ignorance then?
Because ignorance from the standpoint of the jiva, from Ishvara, there's no ignorance.
So we don't even exist really then?
We exist. What do you mean?
But as Brahman, right. But not as a birth. And a death.
No, in this way, that the jiva, there is no first birth for the jiva. There's no beginning for the jiva. There's an end for the jiva, because there's an end because of ignorance.
But
ignorance comes to an end. If ignorance comes to an end, that's what stops the jiva from being a jiva.
But the jiva does exist
eventually.
From the relative level of it.
And the relative level...
You can't say that the jiva doesn't exist.
Well, it depends on what you mean.
Yeah.
Like, here we all exist. This body, mind, sense organs exist. Mm. But in reality, this body, mind, sense organs, all part of Ishvara.
Right.
Right? But, but relatively, here we are. But here we are as part of Ishvara. Right? We're getting off into a thing that I need to explain a lot more. I'll be doing more damage than good.
We don't want that to happen.
Create a confusion.